Well, this hour, we're going to take your calls with Jonathan Emord, author of the latest work called The Authoritarians, Our Rights Being Chopped Up and Whittled Away. Jump on board and give us your thoughts. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Jonathan Emord, as we were talking about his work, The Authoritarians, and we're going to take your calls this hour as well. It's fascinating. Who came up with the, you know, executive orders have been there since the presidency. Even Washington did that. Who came up with this grant idea, Jonathan?
Well, it really was simple as an administrative means of effectuating legislation when the president wanted to direct it in a particular way through the executive branch. But what it turned into, because all power is corrupting, is a means to circumvent legislation. And that occurred in spades in the Obama years, and then it is recurring now in spades. And it's a sign of the total loss of the integrity of the separation of powers. And they talked about the imperial presidency in the Nixon administration, but it's far worse than the imperial presidency. It's a dictatorship. It's transformation of the executive under the Constitution design into something wholly unconstitutional, a dictatorship. And there isn't this discussion in the media. The media is in lockstep. It's really a part of this whole cancel culture movement, by and large, the major media. And I'm very grateful for you, George, and for others who are willing to allow the truth to get out there. But we've got to educate ourselves as a people. We have to read things like The Authoritarians that give us a history that we don't know, largely are unaware of its existence, so that we can understand the enemy here and take action against it. We need to educate the population to enable us then to take the political steps necessary to remove from power those who are intoxicated by power and are abusing it to their own advantage, and put in place a restoration of the constitutional limits on power. That's the only way we're going to save this republic, because it's being taken away from us. We are becoming rapidly a fully socialist nation. We're going to see our freedoms evaporate, disappear, if we don't move.
Now, is it just executive orders you're concerned about, or are other areas?
Every area. What we have now is majoritarian control by those who are authoritarians. They do not believe in individual choice. They believe in government direction. They, in fact, detest individual choice. It's beyond the point of disagreement. They now have this utter revulsion that leads them to think that you shouldn't even be allowed to articulate your position in debate. You shouldn't be allowed to advocate and have a political movement. They initially removed them from the college campuses, and then they worked in the broader area of the media, influencing the media ever leftward. And then ultimately they've triumphed in politics, and so now what we have is this community that wants a majoritarian community that has control to deny the minority any rights whatsoever, to basically eliminate free enterprise. There's not only the executive orders to do this, but this whole climate change agenda is a Trojan horse for socialism. It's not that they want to give economic incentives to the private sector to come up with its own solutions. What they want to do is wipe out the backbone of the American economy, the fossil fuel industries, and replace it with intermittent and unreliable energy in the form of solar and windmills. But that's a planned economy. Recognize there's no difference between that kind of government-planned economy and the government-planned economies of the former Soviet Union. Once you wipe out freedom of choice, you eliminate the private sector, you destroy the Republican form of government. You've created a socialism. And, you know, the Republican form of government is not just simply a possibility among several in our Constitution. In Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, we are guaranteed a Republican form of government. It says that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion, and on application of the legislature or of the executive, when the legislature cannot be convened, against domestic violence. Where is the Insurrection Act? Where are the authorities to put down these BLM organization and Antifa riots? Where are we taking the socialists and communists who dominate those organizations and are trying to destroy the private sector, destroy all governments? I mean, where is the response to that? And this is all part and parcel of the disarming of those protections for individual rights to life and liberty and property. That's the defunding of police. It's not just a crazy idea. It's an intentional idea to stir up a passion, use race as a vehicle to engender that passion, so that you can take away the defense of the people's rights, so that you can then go burn down their businesses and go to, and kill them, and do the same things the Bolsheviks did. This is the playbook for the creation of a communist state. This is how they do it. We're just seeing it happen here for the first time. We have to wake up and realize what's going on.
All right, let's go to the calls now. Let's start by going to Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey, Tom.
Thank you for accepting my call. Jonathan, I look forward to obtaining your work, The Authoritarians. A comment and then a question, Jonathan. Every city, every metropolitan area has what is called a law library. I'm sure you are familiar with it as an attorney. And a law library is an archive of all of the local, state, federal, international laws, regulations, statutes, ordinances, codes, building codes, dress codes, tax codes that apply to every citizen. And what I discovered when I visited my local county law library was that there were literally millions, not thousands, but millions of pages of laws, regulations, statutes, ordinances, codes, tax codes, etc. I mean, there's like 40,000 pages of tax codes that each of these apply to every man, every woman, every sovereign citizen. So, in my opinion, I sort of take the arguments of Democrats, Republicans, socialists, libertarians with a grain of salt, because I always challenge them and say, are you going to eliminate these millions of pages of laws? Because there's no way that the average man or woman can memorize millions of pages of laws, executive orders, codes, tax codes, whatever. And so I was wondering if you would address this. And I challenge anybody in the audience, visit your local law library. Find out what applies, what you're accountable for. That's my question. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Tom.
Well, thank you, and I'm very appreciative of that question, George, and that's very insightful. It's revealing on a number of levels. Here is something. When I was a law student many moons ago, I remember my first day in the law library, walking down through the bookshelves, and thinking how extraordinary it was that the Federal Code of Regulations took up bookshelf after bookshelf of space, and yet the statutes, by comparison of Congress, took up far fewer space. I mean, just one minuscule portion of the space that was otherwise comprised of all these regulations. Regulations are prior restraints, by and large. Almost all regulations are prior restraints. Thou shalt not do, is in other words. Not like criminal laws. Not punishments after the fact when you've been adjudicated for violating a law. Instead, they're prior restraints forbidding you from doing something that would otherwise be lawful and might be completely harmless and might be essential to your business, but you are nonetheless prohibited. Now, that's the reason why this has happened is because of the administrative state that has been around for over 100 years, and it's on the state and federal level. And these are unaccountable to the courts, the Congress, and the people. And as a result, they have absolute power, and they publish these regulations with such a prolific production schedule that people are overwhelmed by it. And your caller is absolutely right. There's no way on earth that any individual who is bound by all these regulations could ever read them all or comprehend them all. And indeed, no one comprehends all of them.
No, they don't even comprehend them.
No, I understand specific areas of the law and the regulations that go under those things. So I do food and drug law, and I do EPA law, and I do other areas of the law that deal with regulations, and I understand those regulations. But I'm not a tax code expert. I don't understand the tax regulations. I have a passing familiarity with it. That may be more than most Americans, but certainly not enough for me to feel comfortable not hiring a tax lawyer if I got in a tax situation. It's ridiculous, and it's the authoritarian nightmare. I mean, this is what we end up with when we allow government to run riot, when we don't have the Constitution operating. The Constitution creates a government of expressly limited powers, of enumerated powers. You can read the Constitution. You can understand it. You can even memorize it. You can't do that with the regulations. The Constitution was meant to keep cabin government, keep it in within checks and balances. And the administrative state is nowhere referenced in the Constitution. It's an extra-constitutional entity. It was unconstitutional. As I point out in the book, if the Constitution had been followed, you'd have to amend the Constitution to create the administrative state. Instead, Woodrow Wilson and others just took the power. What's remarkable here is that in the 1860s, right after the Civil War, academics in the United States, all trained in the classical law, all trained in Locke, all trained in Montesquieu, all trained in the aspects and mechanics of limited government, a limited federal republic, went to Germany, to the German, what we call the historical schools. These were all Hegelian. It was part of Bismarck's Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And they were advocating authoritarianism. They were advocating that government, the legislative bodies ought to go to sleep and turn over all the authority to administrative bodies run by quote-unquote experts. And these experts would give us the answers, and they would give us efficient government, meaning dictatorial government. And these academics were convinced, because they were taught the American Constitution is terrible, that rights, individual rights, are a myth, that Locke was absurd, and collectivism was the answer. They came back. They dominated all the schools in academia, and they created the modern collegiate education system, which is a continuation of this constant attack on the founding principles. And they also became the catalyst for the creation of an administrative state like in Bismarck's Germany here in the United States. And I document this in detail with the names of the specific academics, with when they went over there, with the schools in Germany where they were taught. All that's in the authoritarians. This is part of the story people don't understand. They haven't heard this. And we need to understand where we have this clash. Most people aren't even aware of it. Between this philosophy of socialism, which has been in there, in the government, for so long, hidden in the administrative state, now it's overt. And now we have this direct clash with the Constitution, with the fundamental principles articulated in the Declaration of Independence that are borne out in the Constitution, and we are losing it all. This is the precious thing. Our liberty is the defining characteristic of this nation. It distinguishes us from every other nation on earth. Our written Constitution, which limits government, is the envy of the world, and we're throwing it away.
Next up, we go to Joe in Massachusetts. Welcome, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hi, Jonathan and George. First, I got 2 points.
Okay.
My first point is I'd like to thank Jonathan for warning the people. My second point is I'd like Jonathan and both you, George, to comment on this question. By eliminating the Constitution for the common good, is this a sign that the Antichrist is going to appear in 10, 20, or 30 years?
Interesting question. I don't think so. It's a sign of people who are powerful and manipulative. Jonathan?
But I can say this, George. When you get into the details as I have here, and you find that people who you thought were just basically nice enough persons, particularly some that are absolutely brilliant, you begin to realize that those who have this arrogance, this condescending attitude, that they know better than you do what's in your best interest, that it's okay to take away your liberties, that it's okay to even deny you the right to procreate. In the book, I explained this is just one aspect of the horrific things. There is an evil in this, George. So here we are, and it's the 20th century. It's the start of the 20th century, the first few years, and suddenly there's this eugenics movement. All of a sudden, the progressives, the advocates of this denial of the Constitution, use the administrative state to get rid of people they deem unfit. Now, I'm not talking about using some sort of sterilization method because people were at risk of giving birth to children who were would suffer immeasurable disease. Even that I would find repulsive for a state to adopt a law like that.
Absolutely.
But what they did instead, George, and this is what people don't understand, between 1907 and 1981, George, 60,000 people in this country were sterilized against their will by order of the state under these eugenics laws.
Jeez.
And the Supreme Court of the United States, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr., heralded as one of the greatest jurists of the world, was an advocate of eugenics. In Buck versus Bell, he upheld the eugenics practices and state laws, and he actually took the position in his correspondence that he favored infanticide, that he wanted children to be tested to determine their relative intelligence. And he said if they don't make the grade, they should be eliminated. That's Oliver Wendell Holmes, Jr. He was a progressive. These people went beyond a debate, as I'm pointing out.
On what grounds did they want to sterilize these people?
They took the position that all things that were they considered bad were inherited characteristics. So if you were promiscuous, you would be sterilized. If you were deemed to be promiscuous, if you were deemed to be less intelligent, you would be called an imbecile. If you were an epileptic or had some other characteristic they thought was unfortunate and would be inherited, they thought you should be sterilized. And they created these boards in each of these states.
Sounds like China.
Oh, you bet. And when you consider the numbers, so this is all documented in the authoritarians in detail. But
jeez. But
that is just one example. I mean, all of these things you find over and over again where you have these elitists who are uncomfortable with the changes as a result of the Industrial Revolution. They had state existences. They were part of a gentry class in an agrarian society. Suddenly now, someone like Joseph Kennedy, who is an immigrant, comes to the United States and, through bootlegging whiskey, becomes fabulously wealthy.
Absolutely. Hold on, John. We're going to come back, talk more, and take final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And we'll be back in a moment with Final Calls with Jonathan E. Mord as we talk about his book, The Authoritarians. Fascinating book, by the way. Next hour, Susan Miller, the astrologer, joins us. That's what we're going to talk about, 2021, and then she'll take some calls about you later on in the program. Welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Jonathan E. Mord, author of The Authoritarians. Jonathan, let's go back to the calls. They're lining up here for you. Jerry in Iowa, welcome to the show. Hi, Jer.
Yeah, great bumper music. I'm just loving the Jet Airliner, the ABBA, and Sherry Baby. I mean, just half the reason I tune in.
Well, you get all of it right here. Thanks.
U.S. Navy is saving us again in the nick of time. George, you know, I think John Adams would be proud of you. He started the Navy, you know.
That's right. Right.
It's never a dull moment on coast. So I got a comment and a question.
Okay.
Oh, I attended a Bible study with Kerry Livgren. He's in a band called Kansas, Dust and Wind, and Wayward Son, etc. And he told us, got me to memorize a Bible verse. It says, "The Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty." And so it's got me thinking, so the concept of human freedom, I'm just wondering if our guest, like if you could comment on where that comes from, the concept of human freedom. Is it real, or is it freedom? Is it just something that the government gives us if we're obedient? And by the way, Iowa passed a right to carry, no permit.
That's right.
So it's a really great 10th Amendment day in Iowa. But I hope Coast never gets canceled by the deep state. And I just wonder if you could comment on the concept of the origins of human freedom, if it's, you know, something we just get, or if the government, you know, blesses us with it or whatever.
All right. So, you got it. The deep state will never get to us. But what about human freedoms, Jonathan?
Well, our founding fathers understood well, as they say in the Declaration of Independence, that we were endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, among them life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They understood that man at birth, all men are created equal, all women are created equal, we are born with free agency. Free agency is a gift from God. In a natural state, we are free to choose. We don't have a regulator there that is assigned to us at birth and dictates to us what parental authority this person will exercise on behalf of the state. That is an artificial construct. The natural construct of man is one where we are vested with free agency. The goal of the founding fathers was to protect our freedom of choice throughout our lives, to give us dominion and control, sovereignty over that free agency, over our property, our liberty, and our lives. They wanted as little government as possible. They understood that government was simply a monopoly of coercive force. They wanted that limited to defense. They understood the purpose, as they say in the Declaration of Independence. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that it was the purpose of government to, quote, secure these rights. The very foundational purpose of the government is to secure our rights. We are sovereign in that system. The antithesis of free agency is predetermined fate, essentially that you are assigned a direction at birth. That is the course of socialist government, of communist government, to determine in advance what is to become of you. You are a certain kind of person. Oh, you'll be a laborer. You'll work in this factory. You have no choice. This is what you're going to do. You can't innovate. It's beyond your province. The bureaucrat in Washington will decide what is the innovation that the nation will follow. The bureaucrat in the Biden administration will decide that we're going to have a green economy. There's going to be no airplanes. There's going to be no fossil fuels. You're going to have to rely on intermittent energy sources. And that's our decision. You have no choice in the matter. Close your factory down. Go to work somewhere else. That's the kind of dictatorial thing that is antithetical to this concept of freedom, and it is the very definition of what it is to be an American. It is our defining characteristic in the world. It's the most precious gift any of us has. Without it, we are nothing more than slaves. And with it, we have the endless promise of innovation, the promise of being able to choose where we will work, and being able to vote in our discretion and being able to articulate whatever viewpoint we wish to have. As long as we respect the equal rights of others and don't trench upon those rights, our freedom is unlimited. It is limited only by the necessity of defending and protecting the rights of others. That's the ideal, and that is an ideal that these people who are now in charge are running away from. And they are trying to keep freedom for themselves. In the socialist state, the leaders have freedom, and they have riches. They have more wealth than you can possibly imagine, all taken from the people. And this round of theft, destruction of enterprise and stealing and massive taxation, doesn't go around very far until you end up like Venezuela with 10,000% inflation and poverty, universal poverty. And even the government falters and eventually collapses because it's parasitic and it sucks the life's blood out of its host. And once that blood is gone, so is the parasite along with the host. So, unquestionably, we receive our rights from God. They are pre-political, and that is extremely important. If rights come from the government has the discretion of taking them away. If rights come from God, no one can take
them
away.
Nobody should take them away.
Right.
Let's go to Cornelius in Louisiana. Welcome to the show. Thank you, Cornelius, for holding so long.
Oh, George, you know they clipped me the other day. Thomas E. Moore, boy, I'm glad to talk to you. George and Tommy know what I've gone through. I was a military police officer, then a federal correctional officer, and the FBI and the Federal Bureau of Prisons set me up and said I threatened to kill the warden. But through the Freedom of Information Act, I've got proof now that the FBI knew all about me and knew about the death threats and nails put in my tires and stuff like that. We're losing our rights, and most of your callers are right. Thomas from La Jolla, that guy, Joe from Massachusetts, even the last guy, because I try to take notes and stuff, Jerry from Iowa, because they're God-given rights. And I happen to be an African-American, Thomas, and I'm going to get your book. I'm going to be talking on a show on KPEL, KPEL.com, and it's a great Moon Griffon show from 9 a.m. to 11. And what I found out, they were using slaves, like you were talking about, to fight for the Confederacy and then promised them freedom like the British were doing during the American Revolution. But they promised them freedom, but they weren't going to give them freedom. It was just a promise. And you're right about slavery. And it doesn't matter if it's an African-American or if it's anybody enslaved. Our rights come from our Creator, God. Nobody else. The government doesn't give us rights. But we're gradually losing them, and if we don't take them back, we'll either be in another Civil War or American Revolution, you know. So God bless both of y'all, and I just hope we can make it through all of this stuff.
Remember Braveheart with Mel Gibson? Right before he died, as he yells out freedom. Remember that, Jonathan?
Yeah. Yeah, your caller has a very good point, and I think it's important for people to realize, as I document in the authoritarians, that the institution of slavery in America has been falsely depicted by the 1619 Project and by the BLM organization, and is now this false propaganda is being preached through the schools to youth all over the country, and that is that the nation really didn't start with the Declaration of Independence. It began in the Jamestown colony with the institution of slavery, which was said by these groups to be one of black slavery only. The truth is, if you look at the historical record, the first people enslaved in the Jamestown colony 4 months before the first shipment of black slaves from Africa, which was 20 slaves, the first people who were enslaved were 100 white people from Bridewell, England.
Huh.
And they were from London. And the reason was that they had this movement in England of finally cabining the areas of the countryside that states were on where people were squatting, to get rid of the squatters. They all went into
this is London. Like homeless people and stuff like that?
Yep, and they were vagrants, and the Lord Mayor of London had them all rounded up, and they decided to ship them off to the colonies with the blessing of the Crown. This actually continued with Oliver Cromwell, who sent numerous Irish, tens of thousands of Irish, into slavery in the colonies and into the Caribbean. And so, anyway, there were white slaves in America. There were far more black slaves. In the first part of American history, all the way up to the Revolution, whites and blacks were commonly enslaved. Some were called indentured servants. All the blacks in the Jamestown colony in 1619 were indentured servants as well. But the indenture was meaningless because any slaveholder could get the indenture declared invalid, and the person would be held in lifelong captivity.
Forever.
And that was common. So the indentured servants were really slaves, too. But also, there were black slave owners. People don't realize that. well-documented, starting with Carter G. Woodson and pre-Negro owners of slaves in the United States, published in 1924. They documented the presence of hundreds, even thousands, several thousand, of freed blacks or manumitted blacks who then became slave owners themselves.
Well, did they do that, though, to save the slaves and probably put them under a better confine? Or
yeah,
no?
There were in some instances where there are single slaves who were purchased or otherwise freed and then or were left in servitude but held by a black slave owner. In those instances, you can't really call that slavery. They're liberating.
They're liberated. That's right.
And they couldn't otherwise get them under the laws to be protected. But in many instances, and I show that by 1840, there were 454 black slave owners that had large plantations and had hundreds of slaves, between 10 and 100 or more slaves in this country. So actually, the institution of slavery, while it was mainly whites holding blacks in servitude, also involved blacks holding whites in servitude, which people don't talk about at all, which is actually true, and that the institution of slavery also involved whites. In fact, Irish slaves were among the worst treated slaves because they were so inexpensive at the auction block. They went for about 5 sterling compared to a healthy black person who might go for 50 sterling.
Jeez.
So they were oftentimes considered expendable.
What times? Let's go to Barry, Rock Hills, South Carolina. Hi, Bear. Go ahead.
Hello, George. Martha and I are sitting here in Rock Hills just sad as can be, George. This is a horrible killing. I got a good question for Jonathan, but let me just let her on the air to tell you about Robert Leslie and his family. Here she is.
We're probably not going to have time for your question once we get through this. Hi, Margaret.
Hey, George. I'm going to be brief. I just wanted to put a human face on the Leslie family. I didn't know the HVAC folks that were there, but the Leslies were just absolutely a model family. He was a humanitarian. They were extremely active in the church. They were part of the fabric of our church.
Horrible story. That was my lead story tonight. All of them got gunned down by the former NFL football player. Something happened to him, too, Jonathan. It's crazy times.
It's horrible, George.
Crazy times. And we've only got about a minute or so left. I want you to tell folks where they can get your book.
Well, Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com or virtually any online bookstore or at your local bookstore. I do hope people will get this education that is offered in the authoritarians. We need, as American citizens, to understand who our enemy is. Know thy enemy. Understand what's going on, because if we don't take our country back, we are going to lose it. This is not a situation where we can be idle. Complacency is what led to the success of revolutions, socialist revolutions and communist revolutions. There's a good story in the book, very quickly, George. Donna Casanova was a citizen of the Soviet Union. She writes her own personal account in my book in one of the chapters. And the Bolsheviks really relied on complacency, and she discusses how a family of prominent people who sympathized with the socialists were sitting in their drawing room one day when the doors were knocked down, and in came the Bolsheviks. They expressed that they were sympathetic with the Bolshevik cause. The Bolsheviks then hang them from their own chandelier. The point is, there is no mercy in brutal, absolute power. It's directed against the people, and it's for those leaders' benefit.
Absolutely. Jonathan, thank you again. The Authoritarians, that's the name of his book. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, let's talk about astrology and this year.